Hello.
Good morning.
How's everyone?
I'm okay. How's everybody else?
Good.
Good.
Hanging in.
Yeah. A lot of that going around.
Morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning, welcome. Let everybody come in. Good morning.
I'm not used to you without glasses, Ellen.
That's what's wrong.
I had cataract surgery. Oh. Not wearing glasses. I have to read them like for small print, but anyway, I feel liberated.
Does the vision totally corrected by the cataract surgery from normal use and driving and everything?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Awesome. It's amazing. It's amazing. I don't know how many of you have had cataract surgery. Anybody else had it?
No.
No. It's just unbelievable. It's remarkable procedure. And did you remember if anybody's grandmother's having cataract surgery? They used to wear these big Coke bottle glasses.
Oh, yeah. My eye doctor said I'm on the verge, but not yet. But he said.
Yeah, I waited. I stalled for about 2.5 years after they told me I needed it.
And now you wish you hadn't stalled.
Well, it's amazing how white everything is. The world looks pretty different.
Wow.
Yeah. Too bad you have to wait till they're like what they call ripe or whatever, that they're big enough to take off, because we'd all like to get rid of our glasses.
Well, there's always LASIK, I guess.
I can't do that.
You know what? Yeah, and that too doesn't always last.
Right. I would have been chicken to do that.
Me too.
John did LASIK years ago, and it lasted him like a couple of years before he was back in glasses.
Yeah. Really? Wow. Can they redo it?
Maybe, but it's not worth it.
Yeah.
People have problems, and
it wasn't terribly comfortable for a while, so I don't think he would do it. He'll just deal with glasses.
Yeah.
So... All right. Well, good morning, everyone. This morning, maybe surprisingly, I thought we'd actually explore the spirituality of anger
That's what I need today.
Oh my goodness, well, look at that. And there's Jewish connection to that as well, but it comes up in Torah. So I thought we would explore it. It's a little bit different, but you know, on some level we are all going through different kinds of stress and trauma. So that's what I'm thinking this morning. And you know, I mean, we know there are studies when we experience trauma or stress, like our bodies, our cells store that memory. Even if we think we've put it to bed or put it out of our consciousness, that the wholeness of our body and our spiritual self is really quite quite connected. And so while we explore other experiences, spiritual and emotional experiences as related to our body and our mindfulness practice, learning to, or thinking about how we cope with anger through our bodies in a safe and conscious way is also important, I think, to our staying spiritually healthy. And anger is one of those things we sort of might feel like we could do a bypass, a spiritual bypass. Like, we don't need to deal with that. Like, if we don't feel the anger, we don't pay attention to the anger when it arises. And then we lose that consciousness of how we can, of how it may cause harm to us and how we might be able to sit with that differently. And so I do believe that we can also use mindfulness and our Jewish practice and our Jewish values to transform that energy into something that is constructive and learning and growthful for us. So let's start with a little bit of a sit. I'm going to walk us through a little bit of a body awareness and a little bit of exploration of anger at the beginning, and we'll do something again at the end. So, you know, find your seated space, wherever that is, here on a chair, at a desk, or on a sofa, or lying down, sitting up. Just like, find where you are and notice your body. Be in a comfortable position. Place your hands somewhere where they feel comforted and rested. And notice just all the places of contact, with your body, on the surface that is supporting you, with your hands perhaps on your body. And just notice those points of connection. And allow your breath. Be in a position that your breath is allowed to flow in and out. And just be with that flow for a moment. Don't force it. Position yourself in a way that your breath can flow. And as you are now noticing your body, I invite you to name the things that you're noticing to yourself. Like, you might notice that your breath feels short, or your pulse is racing. You might notice a place of constriction or numbness. You might notice a place of stretching or pressure. Notice and name for yourself the sensations that you are feeling. Okay, now I want you to recall a recent experience of anger, not the worst thing ever, perhaps something small, right? Perhaps it's easier to start with something smaller, but whatever comes up, something recent if possible. So it might be clearest in your memory. Could have been at the store. It could have been with a family member. It could have been with yourself. It could have, whatever it was. No, don't judge it. Whatever arises. And hold that experience. Envision it again. And actually allow yourself to re-experience it. To feel that anger again right now. Allow that feeling to be. And as that anger arises, you can look at it with curiosity, but notice as well what other emotions may have been present around that, that in the moment of anger, you might not have noticed before. Like a detective. What else was there in that moment? Pay attention to how your body felt. Explore those sensations. Investigate for yourself. Perhaps a pit in your stomach, pulse racing, temperature changes. We want to pay attention to the experience in our bodies. So now as that experience is there, let's see if we can transform it. Take a different notice of your body. Feel your feet perhaps now contacting the floor. Notice that. Your feet are on the floor, the balls, the tips of your toes, almost pressing into the floor. If your feet aren't reaching the floor, perhaps it's your ankles or the backs of your calves, supported on a chair, on a recliner, on the sofa. Feel your thighs pressing into your seat. Bring your attention to your torso. Feel its presence. You could even squeeze the muscles for a moment. A little bit different than just noticing. Know what we can do. Know where we can put energy in our bodies, not just where it arises. And move your attention. Some of your anger may have been your shoulders or your neck. And you can squeeze your shoulders up to your ears, down. Or make your hands into fists for a moment. Might have even been manifest in sensations in your head and your face. You could squeeze your eyebrows together and purse your lips and release that. And now as you sit with the breath, notice changes in all of those sensations, in that, from that initial energy that surrounded the experience of anger. We can channel the power of anger in service of love and justice and holiness. We can realign body and mind with sacred purpose. Anger is a challenging thing to address for us, and we often tend to not notice what it's doing to us physically. It can eat away at us emotionally and spiritually, and I'm betting that we're all carrying anger in different ways these days. It may be personally in small situations. We may be noticing that we're snappier than we've been before. The current situation may be bringing up more anger with a family member or with a friend, or perhaps you're just carrying all of the communal anger, that national anger, the raging that's happening so much. And you may be raging silently, not aloud. Anger, I think, can make us reckless. It can drive us to reckless decisions. Not necessarily dangerous, but reckless for our own spiritual well-being. So anger is actually pretty tightly woven into this week's Torah portion too. So in this week's Torah portion, we have the episode of the golden calf, right? The moment of idolatry, which idolatry is pretty egregious in Judaism. It's one of only three sins that can never be committed under any circumstances, not even to save a life. Okay. And God is furious. God is furious at the Israelites. God promised the people, right, that God would be there for us always, right? Only a few chapters back, Exodus 6, we're now in Exodus 32, right? And by now, it's all forgotten. The Israelites have all forgotten that. And so there's a lot of disappointment and anger all around. In this portion, God's part in the Israelites, and frankly, in the part of the people, they're for better or for worse, they're feeling fearful and sad and disappointed and angry that they're now in the desert and feel like this, right? We know from reading the text, like this is no better than slavery, which is a crazy mindset, but that's where they are. Like that is the truth of their experience. And so there's this disruption in the relationship between God and the people. Alan Marinus, one of my teachers, Musar teacher, he wrote about, he compares anger to idolatry, which I found really fascinating. He says, when a person loses his or her temper, he or she becomes overwhelmed and overpowered by the emotion of anger. I'm sure we can all relate. By allowing that to happen, a person yields authority over their life to the raging emotion. And it is then the power of anger that the person serves, as if serving an idol. So, anger can arise for a lot of reasons. I would say one of the fundamental reasons is a disconnect for our desire to control something. Right? Frustration when things don't conform to what we expected them to be. Our agenda is not met. Anger can be the reaction to any situation, I think, could be, doesn't have to be, but in which we expect things to be easier, faster, or just simply different from what they are. Anger might arise because of an expectation that something will go a certain way at work, or because our spouse or our children or our families are changing our plans or making us late, or some plan we had made just didn't go as we hoped. And perhaps that's even God's anger in this week's Torah portion too. Like, it didn't go as God planned. The Israelites are rebelling. It's this lapse in expectation and what is. So in a mindfulness practice, the first thing we might explore and ask ourselves is, why exactly do we expect things to be other than they actually are? But we do, but I think that's perhaps something to explore, right? Our mindfulness, our work, our practicing, our struggling, however you have been experiencing this, right? Is a striving, is a practicing to pay attention to what is present in this moment, to the experiences inside of ourselves and our body and our spirit that help us notice our patterns of expectation, to be able to sit with, to let go of expectations, to be present to what is. So we're on some level, I don't know if we're battling human nature, but there's this challenge that we have of, we expect so often in the little things, not necessarily in the big things, but in the little things, things to be different than they actually are. I read this interesting story in some of my reading. I couldn't find which book it was in. I just remembered it. Not like a self-help book, but one of these story, like memoir story books. But it was a woman who never seemed to get upset when something she depended on broke down, like her refrigerator, her washing machine, telephone, you know, we're a plumber, right, waiting for repairs. And so when somebody asked her about this, she replied that she tends to take all those things for granted. And so she actually treats each breakdown as a divine reminder to appreciate all of her gadgets and appliances when they do work. Wow. That's kind of powerful, right? To notice that anger, or its precursor, impatience, right? Our out of balance capacity to bear something when that's starting to arise. And instead, can we ask ourselves, like, is there something we feel that we're lacking in this moment? And instead of feeding that lack, to find something in the moment for which to be grateful. And so therefore to shift that pattern of of missed expectation. When I was going through some of my old IJS retreat notes, Institute for Jewish Spirituality, and I was doing one of the retreats, we were talking about anger. And one of my teachers talked about anger as thwarted love. So I thought that was really fascinating, because that's about relationships, with people, right? Like a breach in relationship. Perhaps like what's in Torah this week. Anger arises because precisely because we care deeply about something, about a person, about a place, about a situation. And so the root of the anger might not be bad, but the anger for sure itself is not productive. So, but the anger that arises, like we can't just push it away. It arises. So how can we address it differently or use it differently or think about it, knowing that we're in that instead of it tearing us up? How can we use it to bring us to an awareness of something that's out of balance, right? It's arising because something isn't right. Something that is obstructing our ability to be in not thwarted love, right? In a relationship, whether it's something about ourselves, another person, another group of people. So another place to explore anger is not just in like the situations that arise around us with stuff and with things and with plans, but are there places in relationships where there is a thwarted connection that brings up this sense of brokenness, right? So anger can also be a reflection of something that is broken in our lives. And are there places that are habitually that way that we might want to, be more present to, so that we can shift that experience of impatience to anger that takes us apart and find a different way through. And again, I think the Torah portion might have a little bit of help for us in doing that, because after the experience of the Israelites building the idol, the Parsha stops. Actually, the Parsha stops and God is furious. God sees that the Israelites have built this golden calf, and God says to Moses, "The ata hanichali, let me be, that I can go deal with my anger." It's a really odd phrase, but it's, and everywhere the translation I saw, like I looked at about 12 different translations, and they all translated as, "Now let me be." But it's the core root of the word hanicha with a chet, is also from a place of rest. So somehow God is saying, like, I need a break from this. Like, let me go be rested. I need space. I need to not react because I'm furious. Which I found extraordinary. And then the very next thing that happens is a shift to the description of God's qualities, right? Moses is going to say, like, so what am I, who are you, God? And what am I supposed to tell the people? And Moses is in a sense, trying to talk God off the ledge. And Moses says, Adonai, Adonai, El Rachum V'chanun, Erech Apayim V'rav Chesed V'emet. Adonai, Adonai, you are a God, compassionate and gracious, Erech Apayim, slow to anger, abounding in kindness and faithfulness. And we hold up this phrase all throughout our liturgy, and even especially at the High Holy Days, right? These are qualities that we are to notice, to admire, to emulate. And so how can we use mindfulness to think about these qualities? It doesn't say never angry, does it? Erech apayim, slow to anger. So I'm not sure we're not meant to never be angry, but like every other quality, it's about the right measure and the right time. And so even the text talks about God as slow to anger. Anger in the right measure can be our teacher if we take the time to pay attention to the experience of it, because it alerts us. It alerts us to something that needs our attention, a relationship, a break in ourselves, in how we are perceiving what we thought we wanted or needed and what is actually happening in the moment. It can reveal something to us that is deeply wounding or painful, a longing or regret. It can help us clarify and prioritize what, how we want to go forward. All right, so if you think about, if you just hold for a moment, that the moment that you held up in our earlier sitting, right, that a time that anger arose in you, like how can we notice that? What can we learn when we look back, when we look at that with curiosity, with detection, with inspection? And if we are, if we can be slow to anger, if we can hanichali, like if we can say, wait, I need a minute, like even take our anger and like, I need to go somewhere else so I can look at it and see what's happening, right? With time, we can experience the anger. It's not about not experiencing. It's not about being robots. It's not about being automatons, but it's also not being bowled over without any sense of, with like no sense of paying attention to what's happening and just being a runaway train, right? So can we take some consideration? Can we then react, not underreact, not overreact? There are two little phrases that I would raise up from our Jewish Musar tradition. One, Orchot Tzadikim, which is written in about the 12th century. And the text says, it's impossible for an angry person to escape great sin. What does anger lead us to when we're not paying attention? What are the things that we do because we haven't v'hatah hanichali? Now let me take a breath before that train, you know, runs off the track. And then there was a student of Maimonides, Abraham Ibn Chasdai. He was a translator and a student of Maimonides. And he wrote, anger begins with madness and ends with regret. Right? How, without stopping, without some pause, without some attention, without some exploration, we tend to, right? I know that if I don't stop and pay attention, the anger leads me to do something I just didn't want to do or say something I just didn't want to say. So, how can we find those resources in ourselves and perhaps with the help of others to explore and to have more reasoned space around our anger? Oh, and there was one more little. The Koritzer Rebbe, one of our, I think he was from Lithuania, 18th century. Early 19th century, following the Baal Shem Tov. And he wrote, long ago, I conquered my anger and placed it in my pocket. When I have need of it, I take it out. I love that. Because, right, it's on a continuum. It's not never to be angry. It's not never to pay attention to being angry. There's times for righteous anger, but even in our righteous anger, we have to know that there's never going to be a I'm totally right and you're totally wrong, but there's times that anger is going to spur us to the action that we want, right? It's about consciousness and choice, as opposed to anger arising that like the idolatry, right? Like the idolatry of the Israelites, where it becomes so overwhelming and so overpowering that we are serving the anger and not serving the underlying need, whatever that is, whether it's a need for social justice, which is important, or whether it's a need that was unfulfilled in us that the anger is not serving at all. So as we sit with that, Let's do another sitting practice that I'm going to sit with where we are and how perhaps we can find some of that capacity to find strength, to find guidance, to find direction and consciousness from these emotions that arise for us. Because we are, that's what we're working to try and do, I think, is to like train our spirits, train our consciousness to notice. And when we notice, we have more freedom than to choose how we act. So if you need to recomfort yourselves or reshift, or maybe you've been sitting too still, so you want to just move where your weight is sitting on your chair, or you want to shift your back. But be in a position of ease. If you want to close your eyes or just lower your gaze. And again, as you're doing this, get a sense of your body. Sitting here right now. And a sense of where you are in this moment. Physically, spiritually. Notice perhaps any differences from 35 minutes ago in your body, in your thoughts, in your sense of your spirit. Notice what emotions are present right now. Perhaps it's just neutral. Maybe there's calm. Maybe there's anxiousness. Is your mind busy? Just noticing. And name it as you notice it. Just name it for yourself. And then just resting your awareness on your breath. And again, tune into the sensations of the entirety of your body in this moment. Temperature, pressure, pulsing, itchiness, achiness. Perhaps some areas don't have any sensation at all. Feel all those sensations or lack of sensations, whatever is that you are experiencing and now, just experiencing now, just allow it. Let it be. Be curious. Remember, if your mind starts to roll into your to-do list or your challenges of sitting or wondering about other people and other things, or all the things that distract, just bring yourself back to your breath with a smile. can expand your awareness from the physical sensations in your in and around your body to the sounds around your body. You can notice the rising and falling of sounds. There's my voice. Outside, inside sounds. If you follow those too far afield with a breath, come back to your center, come back to the body, to sound and touch. And now bring to mind again that experience of anger that you held earlier. And as you look at it, as you feel it, what would have happened? What might have happened? The Ata Hanichali, if you just had a moment of space, imagine that moment of spaciousness. See how the swell of anger might have shifted, or see how it shifts for you now. The resonance of anger stays with us. We have the capacity to give it space and to transform it. We have the ability to choose our attentiveness. To channel anger in ways that can bring us clarity and strength. Any thoughts or reactions that you would want to share or ask about?
I just have to share something. When my son Adam was a teenager, he began a lifetime of making me crazy, but he was a pain in the butt when he was a teenager. And I read something, it's exactly what you're describing. I mean, he would just make me nuts. And I read something in a magazine, whatever, to use the line, "I'm too nice a person to allow you to treat me like that," and to disengage. And I think that disengaging is kind of what you were talking about. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Adam has an 8-year-old, calls the other day, "Mom, Max is being very rude and I lose my temper with them." Adam, and I rephrased it. I said, "The line is, Max, I love you too much to allow you to treat me like this," and you walk out of the room. So I just, what goes around comes around. But that idea of disengaging, of putting aside your anger, I think is very valuable.
And recognizing that it's going to arise, but that space, right? That's the space. You're talking about like God's space, right? Vata hanichali. Okay, it's there. It's not like pushing it down and saying, don't be there, because it's going to come. But how we, the next thing that we do is what's in our control, right? That next step. So can we take that space? That even God says, "Oh, I'm out of here for a minute." And in fact, what does that do by God saying Vahata Hanichali? Moses gets to decide really what to do next. He almost says, like, "Moses, you take care of it. I'm going somewhere else." But it's that space. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
Well, this resonated with me.
And mostly I suspect for all of us, it's all the little things. It's all the little angers. And it's all the little losses, all the little cracks between what we, you know, if you're a planner, right? And you have your day planned and something like throws a monkey wrench in it. And your first reaction maybe is anger. But that's the disconnect between like our expecting things to be as we plan them and the things just happening as they are. And when we can take that breath between them, perhaps even in starting to notice it, the anger that arises will be lessened. Or if not, then at least it's before then, you know, I go ballistic. I go, okay, right, I can say that's the practice. Like, oh, right, I expected that, but that's not what happens. Okay, I see that. I see that anger happening again. There you are. I gotcha. Okay. Telling me, right, can we take it as notice? Can we take it as a reminder to us, as a red flag, like, oh, right, there we are, there I am again.
I think one of the things as parents, we learn, like Ellen was talking about, my son and daughter-in-law are expecting their first baby at the end of April or mid-April, and they're having a virtual shower this week, and one organized, a friend of my daughter-in-law said, write some words of advice. And so, I think I wrote, count to 10 before losing your temper or before yelling too loudly. And Steve inserted, hug the dog first. And sometimes, you know, just going, I remember when my kids would be, it's a point of all the things that build up through the day, whether the dishwasher broke or this happened or the, you know, the soccer person didn't pick up your kid and you had to get them late to practice. And then, you know, it's growing up as parents and growing up with your kids. And sometimes you just wanted to go in the bathroom and shut the door and just hide for 10 minutes and just get yourself in order. You don't want to, I mean, and I also said in my advice is say 7 positive praises for 3 no's or negatives, because you don't want your kids to learn anger is a solution. You want them to learn what is a positive way to handle it. But everybody is going to get anger, and if you recognize how it is, or it could be something little like my husband didn't clean up well around the sink yet. He made dinner, but there's bits of rice in the range from where didn't get cleaned up. And I'm usually the cleanup person, so that kind of aggravates me to, okay, you made the great dinner, but now we have to finish up before we and clean up everything. So you just kind of have to go, okay, is this worth fighting or talking about? No, just get the sponge and clean it up. But I think you did make some good points about realizing, those of us that are planners, that something can will go wrong or will go wrong, and whether it's the extra stoplight or the car didn't start or something else happened before you got to where you had to be and you're going to be late. So conversely, your anger will rise. And you know it might happen, but what's the solution to prevent it? And I think some of the mindfulness, just pausing and breathing, is helpful for people, just to hang on to that. So I thank you for bringing up a topic that most people don't talk about, but it's a part of our lives that we all encounter.
Well, thank you for being here this morning, and may you find some places of breath.
Thanks.
Great day, everyone. Thanks you for coming. Nice to see you. Keep feeling good, Ellen.